Calcio Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the week of the Calcio Land Podcast. So today we are going to talk about, we're going to go to Italy's capital, is going to be the theme of the podcast. At the top, we'll talk about Lazio's pursuit of David Silva, which I'm very excited about. We'll discuss a few other hot transfer topics. Today, it's been a while. We decided to do a mailbag with listener questions, so we'll get through quite a few of the questions from our listeners, and we have an interview available to all. I realize we haven't done a great job covering Roma, so we took a deep dive on the club with our friend Steve Cerruti. That's going to be available to all, and of course, we have a section of the podcast just for our patrons, but before we get to all that, joined by our dear friend, co-host of the show, producer Alex Goldberg. So, Alex, I have to ask you, I'm very excited about this David Silva potentially joining Lazio. So let me ask you, A, how much do you think he has left? And do you think he could be a game changer for Lazio next season?
It's a good question, honestly. And it's not at all something that was on my radar until the other day. But I don't know why. Maybe we're liking it for the same reason. Maybe we're not. And it's just David Silva, who obviously has been a class quality name for a long time. And we just like the idea of that player being in Serie A. But despite the 34 years of age that he is, I still think he has something to offer. Now, it's tough to tell David just how much, because if you look at like stats, fine, he started 22 games in the Premier League this season, which might not be a lot to some, but he's on City, where they have a B squad that's as good as an A squad. So why would you even at 34 years old need to push David Silva all that hard and start him even close to 38 games? And I'm not saying he was even available for all of those, but still, he managed 6 goals and 10 assists in 22 starts and then 5 bench appearances. 6 goals and 10 assists in the Premier League? That's very good. That's very good. And 6 goals and 8 assists the year before, 9 and 11 the year before. Like, for a player that's all about being composed and knowing how to pick a pass and really just a silky player, still kind of part of that original Spanish core of players that were all known to have sticky feet. And I know this has gone on for a long, long time, but really that contingent of Cesc Fabregas and David Villa and just all those players that are clearly such quality, where the ball sticks to their foot a little bit. They do things at their own tempo. David Silva is absolutely one of the spokespersons of that group, one of the poster boys of that group. But I go back to me saying, how much does he have in the tank? It's tough to figure out because, well, 6 goals and 10 assists, I'm not demeaning it, but it was on Manchester City, where you have Mahrez, Sterling, Aguero, Gabriel Jesus, Kevin De Bruyne, Bernardo Silva. Oh my God, they have so much talent. It's ridiculous. So how real is that 6 goals and 10 assists? Well, I don't care how real it is, because clearly he's still good enough to be playing at the top level for Pep Guardiola, for Manchester City. He's performing when he's playing. And now he's going to a team. This is where it gets really interesting, because I actually asked Stephen Ganavas when we co-hosted, you could say, when you were out, David, about, well, was this Lazio's kind of last chance? And I didn't want to sound so dramatic, but they were so close this season to actually doing it. And then when I look at the ages of some of their core players, besides Milinkovic-Savic, it lends to the idea that, oh, maybe they really just missed their chance because how great is their future? Well, now David Silva's added onto the mix. It's still of that older group, but it kind of makes me feel that they're still trying to push to be really relevant towards the top. And if he can give them something for the next 12, 18, 24 months, that could be quality. It could be quality. And from everything I know, he's a great guy to have in the dressing room. So I think he still has a little bit left, maybe a season or two. And I also just think he's going to bring a presence. I'm not saying he's this big, big talker. I'm not too sure. But I don't think he's going to be this loud, boisterous guy who gets everybody on the same page. And he probably won't even have like a Zlatan effect that Zlatan has in the dressing room over at Milan. But still, I think he's going to be a positive in the dressing room. To what extent, we'll see. And also on the pitch. And fine, I'm actually kind of on board with him joining Lazio. I do think he can help. How much? Enough to get them a Scudetto? We'll see, but I like the move, David. So that's my take. What do you make of Lazio going into next season just in general?
Yeah, so I appreciate your analysis. And, you know, what I'm thinking, for one, when I look at the league overall, you know, obviously we saw Ribery and Ibrahimovic have a big impact late in their career. Lazio does have a history of bringing in big names at the end of their career. They, of course, had Klose. A lot of people love living in Rome. Actually, David Silva's dad was interviewed recently. He did say that his son is interested in Serie A, and he said he'd love the idea of his son living in Rome. Lazio is making him, you know, a good offer salary-wise with a lot of perks. So I think this is a really nice move. And when I look at Lazio's squad, Ciro Immobile, who's going to have Luis Alberto, who signed an extension, and David Silva, you know, helping him out. Milinkovic-Savic has said that he's staying. Hey, you know, I was pretty down on Lazio for a little while, but this is a nice move, and it's not the only thing they are looking to do. They are very focused on their front line. Di Marzio yesterday reported that they are after Fenerbahce striker Muriqi. They've been loaned to Borja Mayoral. At the winger position, they've been linked to Fares of Spal, who's a pretty good player. They're trying to do a Lazzari 2.0 deal, bringing in another winger from Spal who fits in well to their formation. You know, the X factor for me is still the defense for Lazio, because Acerbi is going to be 1 year older next season. He's really the only defender I completely trust on their squad. I was very intrigued that Lazio were going after Kumbula. For a little while, they looked like they were in the lead. Now, I think Inter, especially if Skriniar, if that swap for Ndombele happens with Spurs, I think Kumbula becomes almost a certainty that he's going to Inter. But you got to give credit to Lazio, because, look, they are going to be in the Champions League next season. It's official now, yesterday, that Roma were eliminated in the Europa League. I think David Silva fits in perfectly, this idea of them wanting to do pretty well in the Champions League. So, yeah, I'm a little bit more optimistic about Lazio. Now, I still believe, and I do kind of agree with the assessment that you have with Steven, that, hey, you know, was this really their big chance at winning the Scudetto? Probably. But I do think they are doing a lot of things to consolidate themselves as a team that can consistently get back to the Champions League. So again, I really love David Silva to Serie A in general. And one of the reasons why I say that is because the league has already added quite a few younger stars to the mix this summer. So we had Osimhen, of course, Arthur, and Juve, Hakimi at Inter. So had those moves not happened, I think you could say, oh, here's another older player like Ribery, Ibrahimovic going to Serie A to finish their career. That thing is true, but there are also young players coming in. So very interesting there. So now let's get to some hot transfer topics. We have a few to discuss, some recent things that happened. And which ones are we going to cover today, Alex?
All right, David, let's start off with this. Any chance Barcelona can make another attempt for Lautaro Martinez?
Yeah, so the situation's changed a little bit. So the exit clause was technically, well, the exit clause is only valid at the beginning of July. Inter does it that way, and they had done similar to Icardi. That way, they can kind of give themselves time to find a replacement. So that exit clause, in theory, is no longer valid. So to me, now Inter has even more leverage. They've always said they wanted to keep Lautaro, that they would only let him go for the exit clause. So now that that exit clause expired, they have even more leverage. If they don't want to sell them at all, they don't have to. You know, look, could Inter, based on Lautaro's performances in 2020 since the lockdown, which haven't been great, and he was a little bit better right at the end of the season, could they say, hey, you know, maybe we will move him. We have Alexis Sanchez now on a permanent deal. He's been really excellent. We can then reinvest the money on another striker. So could Inter maybe think in those terms? Possibly. But as Fabrizio Romano reported, at this point, the only way Barcelona would make another attempt for Lautaro is if they sell Suarez and get rid of that massive salary first. I have a hard time seeing that happen in this environment in the market. So it's possible Barcelona make another attempt. But again, what's changed is the exit clause is in theory no longer valid, and Barcelona would have to move Suarez first.
Mm. Well, it feels like we're just always going to hear that link until that actual move does happen. David, let's move on to this. Were you surprised by the rumored Sarigu for Murray swap?
Kinda. I mean, this one came out of the blue a few days ago, and there was been a follow-up report that Napoli are not interested even in loaning out Mire, and this would have been a loan swap of the two players. So at first, my reaction was the same as a lot of people, pretty surprised. But then you dig deep and really think about it, and I always like to look at it from everyone's perspective. Now, I think Sirigu is one of the five best keepers in Serie A, no questions asked. Really, really outstanding keeper. And Torino's had a really bad season. They have a new manager, Giampaolo, coming in. They're definitely looking to turn the page. I could see how a lot of their players, and Sirigu is obviously older at the end of his career, want some new motivation. So it makes sense for him to want to leave, makes sense for him to want to be on a contender like Napoli. From Napoli perspective, and I'm a big Mire guy, I'm a big fan, but for next season, if you tell me who would I rather have just for next season, Mire or Sirigu, it's Sirigu. And if it's on loan, Napoli gets a great keeper for next season and get Mire, who they see as their keeper of the foreseeable future, go to a team where he can play regularly. We know Gattuso kind of likes Ospina's ball distribution. To me, it actually made a lot of sense. And it made a lot of sense for Mire to go to a team where he can play regularly. So I know the reaction from a lot of people on Twitter was kind of shocked on this one. But if you dig deep, I guess it does make sense. But Napoli came out and said they don't want to do this deal. They believe in Mire for next season. So let's see what happens. But what's interesting is Sirigu is definitely available. I think some other Serie A teams should definitely consider him. I think for Roma, he makes a lot of sense as well there. So let's see what happens with Sirigu. It does sound like Mire will stay at Napoli, though. Mm.
All right, last hot transfer topic in this segment. And let's take another temperature check, David. Is it more or less likely that Antonio Conte will stay at Inter compared to last Sunday?
I definitely think a lot more likely. I always said from the beginning that I really thought cooler heads would prevail at some point. And look, you know, there was Conte over the line last Sunday, without a doubt. There were a few quotes that I thought were over the line. There was a lot of reaction that at some clubs that would have been enough to, you know, end the relationship with Conte. But again, you look at the environment from all involved. So what other team is going to pay Conte 12 million net a season? So if he resigns and leaves all that money on the table, what other team is going to pay him that? I don't see a team that makes sense there. The other thing is I think Conte's first season at Inter was positive. Let's see if they can win the Europa League. But I think even without a title, they definitely bridged the gap with Napoli and Juve, which was the goal. For Inter's perspective, yeah, I mean, you could go for Allegri and probably be just fine. But, you know, moving away from Conte now, probably have to go through litigation. Conte would want to keep his money. So cooler heads are prevailing. We've seen it in a few ways. First, Conte released the statement to ANSA, which is kind of the Associated Press, the equivalent in Italy, saying that he is at Inter for a three-year project, and that he'll do anything to make his team win, to help him win. So he was implying that by pushing the team with those quotes, he was ultimately just trying to help the squad, and that he sees himself at Inter for 3 years. And then after the match against Getafe, went out of his way to profusely compliment the club on the Sanchez deal. So yeah, I definitely think cooler heads are prevailing. Even Marotta, in the pre-match quotes before Getafe, downplayed it. So yeah, I think Inter and Conte are going to stay together. That seemed pretty obvious to me as of Monday, even though it sounded bad there. So now let's get to some Twitter questions. We haven't done them in a while, so I appreciated everything that sent in a question using the CalcioLand hashtag. We're not going to get to all of them, but I'll answer the rest on Twitter. So which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, let's start off with this. Plain and simple, who is your MVP of the Serie A season?
Yeah, so Serie A released their awards. A few that we definitely called on. I was very happy to see De Vrij win the Defender of the Year. Absolutely well-deserved. Kulusevski, best under 23 player. Those were easy picks. Now, Dybala was picked for MVP. Definitely fairly controversial. Now, I think Serie A wanted to have an MVP from the team that won. I personally, between Dybala and Ronaldo, would have picked Ronaldo between the two. The case for Dybala is that I think he had 11 goals and 10 assists, was how clutch his goals were. I don't have the stat in front of me, but so many times Dybala's goals gave Juve a 1-0 lead. It ended up being the decisive game. So maybe not a huge volume of goals, but really, really important ones. That being said, he wouldn't have been my choice if I really wanted to go with a Juve player. I still pick Ronaldo, who was so consistent scoring-wise. If I do, you know, go by the most valuable takeaway, that player, the team really loses a lot. I think you can make a great case for Immobile at Lazio for sure. Although Luis Alberto was really, really excellent there. But my pick would be Papu Gomez for Atalanta. I think if you take him away, I don't think Atalanta definitely are in contention for a Champions League spot at all. Really does so much for the team. So I would have gone Papu Gomez first, Immobile second, and then Ronaldo.
Okay, I like it. All right, David, let's move on to this. This would be really something if it happened. Do you see Juve landing Zaniolo this summer?
I don't, and I say that for two reasons. A, I don't see how Friedkin, Roma's new owner, can, as one of the first things that he does, get rid of Zaniolo. It's somewhat similar to how last year Comiso said there was no way he was going to sell Chiesa as one of the first things as Fiorentina owner. And now, look, Zaniolo's way better than Chiesa. So I think maybe Fiorentina fans, for a huge return, would have accepted Chiesa being sold. I don't see Zaniolo falling in that same category. And the other thing is Juve's really at a premium for cash. I don't expect them to make him a big cash deal. Would Roma accept like a Bernardeschi Romero return for Zaniolo? I mean, you'd have to be a really optimistic Juve fan to see that as a conceivable return for Roma. That would be like Juve giving up Dybala for, I don't know, Mancini and Mkhitaryan. I mean, you just wouldn't do that, a player of that caliber for players like that. So no, I don't see Zaniolo joining Juve. I'd be very surprised if Zaniolo left Roma this season because of the new owner, and if he were to it, Juve would definitely have to find a way to raise a lot of funds to make that happen.
All right. Well, how much do you think the Zaniolo injury impacted Roma in the standings, David?
Well, at the end of the day, and we'll hear it more in my chat with Steve Cerruti, I think Roma ended up in the best place that they could have in the standings, in fifth place. Because I do think the teams that finished ahead of them, even with Zaniolo, and as good as Zaniolo is, I still think those teams were better. I think Napoli on paper was better than Roma. They definitely had a down season. Now look, would have Zaniolo made it a lot closer for the last Champions League spot? Yeah. But at the end of the day, I still think Lazio, Atalanta, Inter, and Juve, of course, were better than Roma. So I think they would have been closer for a Champions League spot, but ultimately I think they still finished fifth.
Okay. All right, how about this, David? Could Manchester United go for Chiesa if they failed to sign Jadon Sancho?
Damn, talk about a downgrade if that happens. Now, the Sancho thing is very interesting because, you know, all the reports are Man United has an agreement with Sancho, but Borussia Dortmund wants a huge return for him. I've read some people say that it's being set up as Manchester United can say they made all the best attempts to sign Sancho, but Dortmund just wanted way too much in the post-COVID world for him. Is it possible that that's the case? Maybe, but I still don't exclude Sancho going to Man United. Chiesa being potential consolation prize. I mean, that's a really big downgrade there. But yeah, possible. I guess Chiesa is still a pretty big brand name, especially because of his father, and he still gets a lot of hype. So possibly, but I definitely see it as a pretty big downgrade if that were to happen.
Massive downgrade. And I just still have the feeling that for the next season, Jadon Sancho's on Manchester United and Kai Havertz is on Chelsea. All right.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah.
David, could you see a swap deal between Milan and Fiorentina?
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk because of this, mainly involving Paqueta and Milenkovic, which on paper does kind of make sense for both. Fiorentina are really one of the best defenses in Serie A, especially once Iacchini took over. I think they gave up the least amount of goals in the post-pandemic. Milenkovic has been very good. Obviously worth a lot. Paqueta's worth a lot, mainly because of his big remaining amortized value. I actually see this deal more beneficial for Milan than it is for Fiorentina. I see Fiorentina's in pretty good shape up front, but if Chiesa were to leave, could there be an appetite for Paqueta there? Let's see if it happens. I could see talk, though, more talk about Milan and Fiorentina, but I think Milenkovic being worth so much, I'm not sure if Fiorentina would accept Paqueta as the main return for him.
All right, let's move on to this Twitter question, David. Why would Milan replace Bonaventura with Pessina?
So a lot was made about Bonaventura. I definitely thought it was pretty touching, his last game at San Siro as a Milan player, how he stayed in the middle of the pitch and how emotional he was. And I get that Milan fans have a lot of affection for Bonaventura. Definitely a very good player. You can make a case as good a player Milan has had in the past 6 years, when healthy, definitely as good a player as they've had. But, you know, I've always said that I'm always a little bit reticent when, you know, a team with a big, big fan base struggles for as long as Milan has. Players like Bonaventura maybe get put a little bit more on a pedestal that they should deserve. I've always said, you know, could Bonaventura start on the teams Milan's trying to catch up to? Maybe. But I would say he'd probably be the weak link in the midfield if he's the starter on any of the teams in the Champions League. And could Milan start, could Bonaventura start on the great Milan teams of the past? Probably not. But, you know, I don't want to trash him too much. I mean, definitely a good player. I could see, though, how Milan wants to kind of move on from him. Still a pretty big salary to keep him. I think Milan, with very few exceptions, and Zlatan being the type of exception, and Chiar, because he was so good, are very reticent to give fairly big salary to older players that have no resale value. And I think Bonaventura falls in that category. Pessina, who had played at Verona, had a very good season on loan from Atalanta. Milan actually has a percentage on his future resale, so they could get him pretty cheap. So to me, Milan looks at it as Pessina comes in, lower salary, get him on a pretty good deal because they get him at essentially half price from Atalanta, would have resale value. So to me, that kind of fits the Elliott formula better. A player that can grow at Milan, be a piece of the future, and also someone that, worst case scenario, they can also sell and make a plusvalenza on.
Okay. David, how highly do you rate DePaul, and do you see him joining a bigger club this window?
Yeah, so DePaul's been very good for Udinese, kind of became more as a midfielder as opposed as an offensive winger, versatile player. Argentine international, definitely ready to move on from Udinese. You know, I see some people have linked him to Juve. Juve could do worse than him. There's no doubt about it. He had been linked to Inter and Napoli in the past. Not sure if that makes sense there. Could see him making sense for Milan as well. So I'm a big fan of DePaul. Definitely think he's ready to make the leap to a bigger team.
All right. Is there a current Serie A player you see turning into a great manager? Interesting question.
Yeah, definitely Callejon. And I know he's still technically a Serie A player, probably not for much longer. I think Callejon's definitely one of the smartest players in Serie A. Kind of a manager on the pitch, can really do so much. So I expect him in a few years definitely to become a very good manager.
Wow, I learned something new. I had no idea he was a manager in the making. Wow, very cool. Okay. Had no clue you were going to say him. Huh. That's going to change how I view him completely. All right, let's move on. Is there a former Italian player you were surprised didn't become a manager?
Yeah, good question. I would say two former Milan players jump out at me. One is Albertini, a really, really smart player on the pitch. You know, he went more, and I know he worked in the players' unions, working more on the business side of things. But I always thought Albertini had everything to be a good manager. And the other is Franco Baresi, who was such a great leader of Milan's defense. I mean, I always remember him, you know, running the offsides trap at Milan, just incredibly smart player. He's become more of an ambassador for Milan. So I'll say Baresi and Albertini, without a doubt.
Okay. All right, David, let's move away from football for this last question of our Twitter question segment. What are your top five metal anthems?
Yeah, so I have to say we haven't covered Roma enough, and we're going to make up for this with Steve Cerruti at the end of the podcast. We haven't done pop culture. We got to do a little bit more of that. We've been kind of playing catch up from my illness, but I am starting to get better. So thanks to the listener for sending us a pop culture question. Been thinking quite a bit about it. Tried to hit some variety. So top five metal anthem. The first one that comes to mind, I'm not the biggest Judas Priest album fan, but I do like their first few albums. I'm going to pick Living After Midnight as a great metal anthem. Same Iron Maiden. I mean, I definitely respect them. I think they're really, really good, but not my favorite metal band. And Run to the Hills, definitely a great metal anthem. Of the bands that I really like, Metallica, you could pick a lot of them, but I'm going to go with Seek and Destroy, usually their last song of the set, either that or Enter Sandman, but I'm going to go Seek and Destroy. For Megadeth, definitely Peace Sells has that great part at the end, that awesome bass riff. And the last one and my favorite is Pantera, Walk. To this day, I'll never forget seeing that video for the first time. So thank you everyone for sending in questions. If you like getting your questions answered on Calcioland, also consider becoming a patron. We answer all of our patron questions on the podcast. Sometimes if we get a ton, we answer them on the app, but we almost always answer them there. Have a ton of great content on Patreon. We typically have a bonus interview of the week. I chatted with Chris Winterburn this week. We have some excellent articles that Enrico Passarella wrote this week. I'm going to post our first transfer rumor raider of the summer between today and tomorrow. So a lot of cool stuff on Patreon. If you enjoy Calcioland, consider becoming a patron. Okay, so I'm very excited to be joined by our next guest. You know, we try as much as possible on the podcast to cover all the league. And I realize we haven't done a great job of covering Roma at all since Calcio came back. So wanted to bring on a great friend of the show, Steve Cerruti. We've had him on many, many times. Steve right now is working on an excellent podcast called Box to Box, which we'll ask him at the end of the interview. But what I figured we'd do today is recap Roma's season. We're not really going to talk about the ownership change. We're recording this Thursday. We're going to let our friend John Solano rightfully own that corner. He's done an amazing job covering the sale. So Steve and I are going to mainly recap the season. We are recording shortly after that terrible performance in the Europa League, but we'll try not to be too much prisoners of the moment there. So Steve, with that out of the way, it's always great to chat with you. Welcome back to Calcioland.
Thank you, David. Glad to be back. And, you know, in typical Roma fashion, you know, they break your hearts at the end of the season, just when you start to get your hopes up a little bit. But pump through. I'll try not to let that dampen the mood.
You got it. All right. Sounds good. So Europa League, from my perspective, obviously, Roma was one of the teams that did the best post-pandemic. They were doing really well for a while. There was also hope that maybe an unexpected win in the Europa League could knock Lazio out of the Champions League. They'd also need Napoli's help. But I got to say, this performance today was really pretty poor. Dzeko wasn't shy afterwards. So let me just ask you, Steve, how disappointed are you in this? Did you have any particular hopes for this Europa League, or were you kind of expecting that the players were one game away from vacation and they would just get ready for that?
You know, it wasn't the loss necessarily that bothered me, David. It was just the fashion in which they lost that game and just the lack of really any sort of continuity after looking so good, as you mentioned, to close the season out. I didn't have high hopes that they would win the Europa League. I didn't think they would beat Sevilla and then most likely Wolves back to back. Although I think they're, I'm not sure exactly. I'm recording this, I think, when they're playing, but I didn't have much faith in them running sort of the gauntlet here and getting one of those Champions League spots. I would have just liked to have seen them continue the form that they had at the end of the season and try to sort of build on something for next season, because I do think Fonseca did a really good job of pivoting with the formation, and that completely changed really the entire back half of the season, especially when they came back after the lockdown. So it's just how they lost that was so depressing, because, you know, if you look at Sevilla, I think Sevilla is just a flat out better team than Roma. So yeah. When you look at their back line, I think their entire back line would start for Roma, probably most of their midfield. So it's not like they were, you know, it's not like Roma were probably expected to win this game. Then you look at Sevilla, they've had, you know, a history of success in the competition. So I didn't necessarily think it was going to be a runaway win or anything by all means, but they just looked completely out of sorts. They couldn't get anything going. They looked like all the tactics that they had sort of that had sort of changed their season when they moved to the sort of wing back formation with three in the back. They just looked like they couldn't, they were all uncomfortable on the ball. Even the wing back Spinazzola didn't look great. Bruno Perez looked like the old Bruno Perez that we knew before the lockdown. So it's just the way that it happened, David, that was disappointing. And I just kind of, I was hoping with a Champions League spot on the line that they would go out swinging. But the problem is, I just kind of think they have so many players that are either not confident or playing out of position or just don't really belong at a club with the aspirations that Roma has for being a Champions League team, that it kind of, you know, it kind of bit them in the backside this time.
Yeah, no, well said. I think you broke it down very nicely there. So now let's review the season a little bit. I sent you some questions trying to hit the main things. And let's talk about Fonseca, because it's been interesting how flexible and adaptive he's been in a lot of ways. I remember when he first arrived, I was really surprised by the offensive identity Roma had. And now I feel like we're talking more about his switch to the three-man defense, you know, also because of injuries, he had maybe become a little bit more defensive. So give me your assessment of his first season at Roma. If you had to give him a grade, and in general, what's your impression of him so far?
I was happy with when the hire happened. I thought it was a kind of sort of outside the box look of a guy who plays really attractive attacking football. And, you know, obviously the Ukrainian league, Shakhtar winning, you know, the league three straight years and the league cup three straight years isn't really shocking, but, you know, just, he had always had success in the Champions League as well. He was just a really impressive manager when you watch those Shakhtar teams. So I was excited and optimistic. So maybe my sort of, I'm looking at this through sort of a rosy colored sunglasses situation here, but I'd give him a B minus, David. And I think the goal, like if he'd gotten top four, which was the goal, albeit a pretty difficult one to achieve with the roster that I think they had, that would have been an A. And, you know, for them to finish fifth, and yes, they were pretty far off the pack. You know, obviously they finished behind Lazio, which is disappointing. But I just don't think the roster really fit him. I think this will, I really hope they give him several years to sort of build an identity and get some of the players that he wants in there, because I truly believe he can be a good manager. So, and I think a solid B minus is good. They started off really well. As you mentioned, they were scoring a lot of goals. I think a lot of people thought they were going to, you know, they were going to win games 4-2 and 3-1,
yeah,
and they were
going
to be really exciting, which happened. And then they sort of transitioned into a little bit of a defensive team and were better, I think, than people expected. And then in typical Roma fashion, middle of the season, they go through a terrible slump where they just look like they can't do anything. You know, they couldn't score. They couldn't defend. The simplest task they couldn't achieve. And then sort of after the lockdown, I mean, once they come back from the lockdown, he changes the formation, goes to three in the back, which probably, if we're being honest, suits the roster that he had, because you want Spinazzola. He's not a true left back. He really isn't. And, you know, even despite the fact that he had that terrible blunder against Inter, he had been playing really, really well and was really dangerous, looking like the guy who, you know, obviously Juve bought with Atalanta before, who was just bombing down that left side. So that got me excited, and I was excited to see a tactical change. And then also on the other flank, you know, Bruno Perez, he basically comes back from the dead and is all of a sudden this wing back that Roma can really use, which was wild. So I really like the tactical change. I don't know if that's going to be his identity going forward, though. And I think this summer is going to be huge for him. I just really, really hope and pray that for the first time in what seems like a long time, Roma, now with obviously new owners, who knows about whether Petrarca is going to come back or that situation there. But I really hope that they back him and they give him the style of players that he wants to succeed, because I do believe he can lead Roma to top four and potentially, you know, obviously, hopefully the goal is winning a trophy.
Yeah, you know, I think you put it very well. I think Roma, at the end of the day, had the fifth best. Maybe, I mean, Napoli was probably better, but all things considered, that's as good as they were going to be in the standings. So, yeah, I agree with you. And I do appreciate how flexible and how much he changed there. So now let's go over some positions, and let's start with the goalkeeper. I know I sent you this question last night because I've been watching a lot of Roma. You've definitely watched more than I, but I've watched, you know, at least 75% of their games this season. And I really haven't been able to determine if I think Paul Lopez is a good keeper or not. Now, today, you know, I don't want to be too much of a prisoner of the moment. Not great on the first goal, to say the least. So what's your assessment of Paul Lopez? And if we look at the extremes of Roma goalkeepers in recent years, we had Olsen 1 year, disastrous. Alisson, who was the best goalkeeper in Serie A the year before. Where do you kind of put Paul Lopez on that range?
It's so drastic, David. I mean, if Robin Olsen was a 1 and Alisson was a 10, you know, Pau is probably a 5, I would say. You know, you can see that there's a good goalkeeper in there somewhere. I think we get a little bit too carried away when we talk about how great guys are with their feet. Like, because I wasn't just like,
do
they have what it takes between the posts to have the mental fortitude to not fold under pressure, to be in the right position? And you can get enamored with, oh, the distribution, which is great. And certainly, you know, we've been spoiled with the season from Alisson, who was unbelievable and probably the best goalkeeper in the world as far as distribution. But Pau, the problem is, I think he really has never recovered from the mistake in the derby against Lazio.
Yeah.
He really hasn't. And I thought he started the season really well. He looked pretty good. He was making some saves. There were a couple games that he completely kept the team in. And then after that happened, he just looked like he never regained his confidence. And I'll tell you this, David, I was confused. I didn't understand the transfer to begin with. And, you know, to be honest, I didn't know a ton about him other than just like FIFA, the video game, and he has a really high potential rating. So I got excited for that. But I didn't know a ton about him coming from, you know, obviously La Liga. But there were a lot of people on Twitter and in the football community that said that this was a young up and coming guy. He was the number 3 goalkeeper for Spain. And so I was excited. And ironically enough, I think the Spain thing there between David De Gea, Kepa, and now Paul Lopez, it seems like all of them are suffering this incredible like identity crisis of confidence in who they are and whether or not they're actually good. It's wild. I don't know what the Spanish national team is doing, but all of those guys have had really poor seasons. And listen, the Paul Lopez situation isn't quite as dire as the Kepa situation. There's really nothing worse than that. But I think there is a good keeper somewhere in there, but I truly believe if Roma were to get their money back, I think they would sell him in a heartbeat. And I think your tweet was on point. Is there are so many great Italian goalkeepers. I don't know that probably would have cost them less money. I don't know why they spent, 20+ million on him. And while I think he can be a good goalkeeper, I just didn't understand the transfer from the beginning.
Yeah, no, and I think you make a great point on the ball distribution feed. I think there's been too much enamorment with that. I know Daryl Morey, obviously, you know, well, because of the NBA, who's been doing a lot of statistics on soccer, football. And he said the most overrated thing is the ball distribution keeper, that saves are way more important. I totally agree there. So now let's move to the defense. And I tweeted this, and I feel like, you know, Smalling with this match today is a little bit like Joe Biden in 2020. As long as he does nothing, he looks great because the people around him aren't doing so good. So obviously Smalling was really good this season. You know, Ibanez looked pretty good for a little while. I don't want to kill him over today, but tell me in general, how important is it, in your opinion, that Roma brings back Smalling? Now, they weren't able to reach an agreement with Man United. I think Man United was trying to force them to buy him outright, kind of how Inter did with Sanchez. That didn't happen, but Roma can still sign him. So tell me, in your opinion, how important is it to bring him back? And say they don't bring him back, how are you going to remember Smalling as a Roma player?
So I think my stance on this has been pretty much the same for the whole season. And it's just that I think it kind of depended on whether or not Roma made the Champions League and were getting that revenue to bring him back, because I don't think it makes a ton of sense for them to spend 20 plus 5 plus the already 3 that they spent on him for the loan itself. I just, for a 30-year-old defender who, you know, yeah, was really good this season and kind of had his ups and downs a little bit later in the season, started off really, really well and seemed to love the city and understand the club's identity, which is all really important. But, and I know you're going to get into this with John Solano, and I'll certainly be listening to it. But I think it depends kind of on the ownership situation a little bit, because if, you know, Roma don't have a ton of money, they don't have a ton of money to play with. They don't ordinarily have a ton of money to play with. And now, obviously, with, you know, everything that's going on with the worldwide pandemic, it doesn't seem like, you know, that's a lot of money for a team like Roma to throw around for a guy that they probably won't get much resale value on. So I look at it like I wouldn't be super sad if I would be sad if he left, but I wouldn't be sad if, you know, some club came in and paid $25 million for him, because I just think that that's not what Roma should be doing at this point. I think they could probably get a solid younger, you know, center back to invest in that would cost less than that. And like, look at Ibanez. He's, as you mentioned, he's been really good. Obviously, he had a rough match today, but everybody had a rough match today. You know, Mancini is a whole other thing. I think you mentioned you don't know whether Paulo Lopez is good. I feel like we have a whole season with Gianluca Mancini. I don't know whether he's good yet, which is not a great sign. So I guess maybe that would suggest that we should keep Chris Smalling. Listen, I would love to have him back. I just feel like the financial situation doesn't make a ton of sense for a club that's not in the Champions League. And if he does leave and you know, goes somewhere else or returns to United or ends up going, you know, I really hope he doesn't go to another Serie A club. That would kind of be devastating. But I'll remember him fondly, because he was one of those guys. He came in and instantly understood the culture of the club. They seemed to jive with the fans really, really well. And I think he really does want to stay. I think all the fans and even the team would want him to stay. I just don't think it makes a ton of sense financially.
Yeah, as usual, well put, well said there. I agree. So now let's move to the midfield. And I wanted to ask you this. Like, overall, I think midfield's still an area of strength for Roma. There's upside as well, but I'm going to put you on the spot. If you could only pick one long term between Pellegrini and Diarra, who would you pick and why?
Oh, so this is probably the toughest question, because I think when you're talking need, David, they don't need Pellegrini. He's almost a surplus at this point. I look at him and he's almost a luxury player in a lot of ways. If he's not giving assists, which he's really good at when he's in form, but he hasn't really been in form for much of the second half of the season. If he's not doing that, he really doesn't bring anything whatsoever to the table. So, Diawara, I would say, is the guy I would pick to keep around, because I think when you look at, if you have he and Berrettou as sort of your two-man midfield, depending on the formation that they're playing, I think Roma could feel really confident about that for the next couple of seasons. They've certainly missed Berrettou today in the match against Sevilla. He's been incredibly underrated for them, especially in the restart in the second half of the season. When Diawara is healthy, he's a really, really good player, and they kind of perfectly complement each other. Whereas I look at Pellegrini, I go, okay, if he's playing that playmaking number 10 role just behind the striker, they already have Mkhitaryan, who they just signed on a free from Arsenal. They already have Zaniolo, which I think that's sort of the position that I would most like to see him in. So Pellegrini is kind of third in the pecking order there. I think, you know, listen, I obviously the Roman thing comes into it, and, you know, it becomes complicated for homegrown guys like Pellegrini. I do think he is talented. I do think he is sort of wrongly blamed for a lot of the struggles that this team has had, especially, you know, up front and in the goal scoring situation. I don't think he's all to blame, but he really, really needs to improve his goal scoring output if he's going to play up there. And he's really, he just hasn't shown that he's capable of scoring a lot of goals. So I just don't know if the assists are enough. And if you're going to get an offer from PSG or whoever it is for, you know, 30 million euros, I kind of think they have to take that, because he's sort of a surplus at this point.
Yep. Just real fast on Mkhitaryan. If you had to pick between Mkhitaryan and Smalling and you could have kept just one, are you kind of glad that it's Mkhitaryan so far?
That's a tough. I think that's probably the right call, because Mkhitaryan, yeah. he is a completely different player than anyone that Roma has. He is. It's weird because, you know, he was so good at BVB, and a lot of guys go to the Premier League and they don't have success. Although I would argue that he was in two terrible situations in the Premier League. He was with a Man United team that seemed to be in complete turmoil, and then went to Arsenal, which was another situation complete turmoil. So I don't know. I feel like he got a bad rap from a lot of Premier League players saying, oh, he's just some flop that is going to land in Serie A. He's just a really intelligent player. Maybe he's not as athletic as he used to be, but he brings something that no other attacking player brings for this Roma team. Not Zaniolo. I mean, Zaniolo is physically dominant, but just the intelligence on the ball, where to be, playing the right pass. Roma just doesn't have a guy like that. So I think he is a little bit more valuable than Smalling.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I totally agree. Big fan of Mkhitaryan. So now let's talk about probably the most irreplaceable player on Roma is Dzeko. Is really, really important. So tell me down the line, how hard do you think it is to be able to find someone to be his heir apparent? Because it seems that really he's one player that is really so important to the team.
He is. I'll agree with you there, David, but I'll push back just a little bit, because I was of the opinion that I would have been okay with selling him this past summer. I think it was kind of the perfect time, and I know there was some haggling going on with Inter for the price, and you know, I wouldn't have been upset with him if he wanted to leave, because I think he has given everything to the club. I mean, he's obviously won Capocannieri, and he's you know, just been a good servant for the club, and probably a guy who even came when he came to the club was higher than the skill level for the rest of their squad. So I have nothing bad to say about Dzeko whatsoever, but I kind of felt like this past summer, bringing in Fonseca, new manager, it was time to maybe change the system, maybe take a step back and take one step forward or two steps forward in the future. And, you know, they're so dependent on him. You're right. But I almost think that's to a fault sometimes, where they feel like they need to play through him constantly. And if he's not up to par, or if the defense is sort of taking him out of the game, I think a lot of the other attacking players sort of just fold and don't really know what to do, because they're so used to having him be the focal point. I would have liked to have seen them maybe have a more open attack with a different kind of striker, maybe someone who's a little bit less experienced, but something like what Napoli did in the post-Higuain era, where, you know, they weren't so reliant on one guy scoring all these goals, that it actually made them better in the long run. So it's going to be difficult to replace his goal output, but there's no question about that. But I do sort of feel like on his day, he is still world-class, but I don't know if he's offering that game in and game out. And if they were able to get, you know, a decent fee for him, I wouldn't be super upset with him leaving. I would be more excited about potentially seeing what Fonseca could do with a different striker up front.
Interesting. Okay. So now let's talk about Zaniolo. So I want to, obviously, sensational, I'd say definitely, if you ask me which Italian player has the best chance of winning a Ballon d'Or, to me, he's the clear answer. So tell me a little, I have two questions on him. A, what's your favorite aspect of his game? And B, how hard is it to watch him, in the sense that, you know, looking at Roma's track record, you know, the odds of Roma being able to hold on to him post-2021, and I think there's no chance he's sold this summer, because there's no way a new owner comes in, and that being kind of what he's known for right off the bat. But, you know, looking at Roma's track record and all, him staying long-term doesn't seem that likely. So tell me a little bit about that dynamic, having that in the back of the mind. Maybe it isn't. And what's your favorite thing about Zaniolo's game?
Well, my favorite thing about his game is just his ability to absolutely bully midfielders and defenders, carrying the ball forward and making, you know, grown men look like children sometimes. I mean, the run and the picture of him, like, basically pushing Bernardeschi out of the way in that Juve match, and which, you know, led to this incredible run and the assist he had. That's just, I mean, you just don't see that a lot, especially from guys that are 21 years old. And yes, there are still, you know, there's still something to be desired there in the decision making and maybe the finished product, but he's just such an exciting player who can carry the ball throughout the entire midfield. He'll come back. He didn't really do it much today, which I don't think he was really settled into that match at all. And Roma didn't really have a ton of possession anyway against Sevilla. But he can come, you know, deep into the midfield and just carry the ball all the way, almost box to box in a way. I know you've compared him in the past to Pogba, and I do think there are some similarities there. it's just incredible to watch his dominance of, like I said, of grown men. He's a monster on the ball. He could be a freight train going forward. And, you know, his left foot, I mean, he could sting a shot for sure. You know, I almost think, you know, the comparison a little bit too, I think he has some, like, a little bit of Kai Havertz in his game. I know your guy, Alex, yeah, love that. That comparison. He doesn't have a game time that Havertz has, and Havertz is much more, you know, seasoned at this point because he's just been playing for, I think, 3 to 4 full years in the Bundesliga already. But he kind of has that excitement in his game, and I'm with you. I think more than any other Italian prospect, he is the guy who I think, you know, the Azzurri fans should be really excited about, because they just don't have any player like him in the squad, and he is absolutely incredibly dynamic. Now, as far as the aspect of him potentially leaving Roma, I just kind of try to put that out of the back of my mind. I mean, I guess I'm sitting here as Dan Friedkin is potentially taking over the club and hoping that maybe something will change, because, you know, you're right. If it was under Pelota, he probably would be gone in a year or two. And that's just the way that they've handled things in the past. I guess my hope would be that with Friedkin coming in, they can maybe invest in the club, get rid of some of the debt, be able to, you know, be in a position where they don't feel like they need to sell Zaniolo to just stay afloat. And also hopefully grow around him, because he is the type of player that I truly believe that if he's your center point, you grow with him, you're going to be able to win trophies with him. He has the elite mentality. He's physically elite. I mean, yes, maybe a little bit of maturity to do it because he is still just 21 years old off the pitch. And we've seen some of the stuff with Moise Kean, but I don't think that's like a major red flag. I think he can truly be a guy that changes the fortunes of both Roma and the Italian national team.
Let's hope you're right, because I think it'd be great if he stayed there long term. So before I ask you about it,
well, really quick, David, I also think too, you know, I think it benefits him to stay at Roma for longer. We've seen, and you've talked about this on the pod, you know, Bernardeschi, his growth has been stunted because he went to Juve probably too soon and now isn't getting the proper playing time to develop. We've seen so many guys like that, you know, they should probably stay at their club and fully develop and then make a larger jump maybe in their mid-20s. And I do hope Zaniolo can do that, because I do think it'll be better for him in the long run too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Before we get to your podcast, the Box to Box show, let me ask you this. Let's look at Roma and the larger landscape of Serie A. So I agree with you that Fonseca got him to fifth place. That was their ceiling going in. Now, next season, which will be here sooner than you know, we have Napoli, who definitely look like they're going to be stronger than last season. We have Milan, who look to be certainly on their way up. We have Inter, who's making some moves on the transfer market to solidify their position. We now see Lazio linked to David Silva. I mean, I do think there'll be some regression with Lazio. And we have Atalanta that have shown that last season was not a fluke. And I know, look, you know, there's a ton of uncertainty with the new ownership and all, but just tell me a little bit where you see Roma fitting into the landscape. Do you see Serie A as a whole improving as a league? And do you think Roma needs to do more to keep up with the other teams?
So I was actually talking about this a little bit with a Milan fan that I'm friends with, who, you know, we were talking about how the top seven in Serie A really next season is going to be so competitive. Just the finishing for the top four places, I think all of those teams are very similar. You know, I'm with you. You know, maybe I'm being a hater because, you know, it's Lazio, but I do kind of feel like this was their season. And I definitely think there's a regression coming for sure, whether they get David Silva or not. I mean, especially if they're in the Champions League, although they haven't really taken, you know, some of those cups very seriously in the last couple of years. So who knows, maybe they'll change that this year and try. But I don't think that there's some team that is set up for the next, you know, 2, 3, 4 years to keep this up. Who knows about Atalanta? I think who knows about Conte at Inter Milan, although I still think their squad is good enough where they're probably going to be at the top of the league. And Juve is obviously going to be there as well, even if they aren't as strong as they used to be. Milan, I look at and I go, okay, sure, they had a really nice end of the season, but, you know, I'm going to need to see a little bit more. I'm going to need to see, to put a whole season together before I get really excited about them. The one team I will say is I think Napoli will probably be back and probably be a top four team next year because they just have the talent. I just trust the way that they're run. I think they're probably the best run club, maybe outside of Atalanta in the entire league. So it's going to be really tough for Roma to finish top four next season. But I think all seven of those clubs are really close, and it's going to be awesome for the league. That I think, you know, it is annoying to see Juve win year after year after year, and that is annoying. But I think the top of the league is going to be so fun next year that it's going to be a good thing for Serie A when you have all of these clubs fighting for Champions League spots. And wherever Roma fits in that, you know, I'm confident that next year will be better. I'm confident that they will get more players that fit Fonseca's system. I'm confident that the players that are there now will be able to sort of grasp what he wants more next year. And I'm also hopefully confident that they'll be able to sell some of the dead weight that they have on their roster as well. So I'm not sitting here saying, oh, you know, Roma's maybe they're breaking even right now, and it is a little bit of a complicated situation with the new ownership, but I don't think they're trending in the right direction. I think you should be optimistic as a Roma fan, because they did have a lot of things go wrong for them this year. I mean, as they suffered a ton of injuries, as they seemingly always do. You have to think at some point they're not going to suffer so many injuries one of these seasons. So, you know, and obviously it was the first season under Fonseca, so next year will probably be better. I think there are a lot of reasons to be optimistic that Roma could finish top four next season.
Absolutely. Okay. So, Steve, I always love chatting with you. Just very easy. You know what you're talking about. Great stuff. So I know people enjoy hearing you on our podcast, but you're involved with a podcast where you talk about soccer, football, a box-to-box podcast. So tell our listeners a little bit what they can expect when they tune in.
Yeah, so box-to-box was something that I started with a couple of friends of mine who are Premier League fans. And U.S. men's national team fans, probably in like 2014. And we did it as sort of a YouTube video blog thing where we were just giving our thoughts on different stuff. And, you know, life happens, David, like things get busy, people, you know, things fall by the wayside, but we were able to bring it back, which is really exciting, for the end of this season and going forward. And, you know, we pretty much talk mostly Premier League, U.S. men's national team for sure. We're all big U.S. men's national team fans. We do talk a little bit of some of the other leagues. We definitely talk Champions League as well. But one of the things that we also do, which is a lot of fun because we're all really big FIFA fans, the video game, is we organize 32-team World Cup tournaments or Club World Cup tournaments that really anybody can sign up for on Xbox. So if you're interested, make sure you follow at Box the Box Show on Twitter. We got actually another tournament coming up of a Club World Cup. We're looking to get 32 teams in there, 32 different players, and you know it's like a real World Cup, David. It's a draw. We do a live draw of four teams in each group. Two teams make it. You play the other guy online. It's actually really competitive. And for people that are looking for something different in the FIFA community, it's something that I think they should check out.
Absolutely. So Steve, always a real pleasure to chat with you. Thank you so much for helping us. Do an overview of Roma. Definitely follow Steve at Cerruti. Check out the Box to Box podcast. And I look forward to chatting with you again, my friend. I hope you have a great rest of the summer.
You too, David. Anytime. Thank you.